Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the After Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Hello.
And Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Hi, everybody.
So, gentlemen, I'm going to talk about one of my favorite topics if we have a chance. But, Bryce, if you want to go first, if we have an email, whatever, we can respond to that.
Yeah, we got an email. To find the email in the show notes from an anonymous. We'll read this anonymous. He didn't give his name in it. He writes, "Hey, guys, I was wondering what your opinion was on drug and alcohol use in the creative process. I understand that you all have very different relationships with them things, and I can probably guess what the best thing to do is, but I would like to know your opinions on it. Thank you."
And he wrote to know sounded was spelled like toke now.
Tuck now. man, this is a big issue because, I mean, obviously the base answer is, wouldn't it be great if nobody relied on any kind of stimulants or hallucinogens or depressants of any type? And, you know, the quote unquote real you is where all your art came from and so on. And yet we have the factual database history of really wonderful things coming from people who eventually killed themselves going too far with the use of mind-altering chemicals of all varieties.
Yeah. I mean, you can even get into the recent topics of like people who are streamers who are using drugs.
Stimulants to keep going. Yeah. I think it's all public that friend of the show, people. You know, yeah. One of the friends of the show recently, you know, was like, "Guys, you just watched me game for 36 hours straight. How can you not think I took Adderall? Like, that's crazy." And then also we see performance enhancing chemicals, not only on the artistic side of things, but also in the sports side of things. Mm-hmm. And even, you know, when you're in the military, a lot of the stuff available now started off as go pills and no-go pills. Because if you're going to fly 48 hours to go do a bombing raid on, you know, Serbia or whatever, you got to stay alert the entire time.
Yeah, it's a reality in that. You know, and it's such an obvious example that we often ignore it and go away. Of course, you know, caffeine. You know, Starbucks is super popular because they took the caffeine out of the coffee, then people wouldn't go there. And it's caffeine is a stimulant, and so you know there is a huge distant difference to some degree you could say between you know Starbucks to you know somebody who's dropping acid when they want a free form create or paint or whatever. But if you're going to Starbucks every day spending $4 or $5, you know, that's a couple $100 a month caffeine habit, whatever, and the damages and whatever. And our bodies, we've been using substances to alter our perceptions, our speed, a lot of things for thousands of years, for tens of thousands of years, you know. And then there's certain times in historically where you've had large parts of the population were constantly a little bit buzzed or drunk because the water is so bad and the only thing you could do was drink wine or, you know, beer or whatever, you know. And that's, you know, one of the things observations that my friend Peter Wax made about Ben Franklin was like when Ben Franklin was working with other people, he realized they were all getting drunk in the morning, you know, with a little bit of beer buzz. But he figured out if, you know, he's drinking tea or whatever, he wouldn't have to get drunk. And he wouldn't spend as much money on beer and he could handle their finances. And it was an advantage for him not to be there. I think you have to say, what is your goal? I have friends that are high functioning, but are also do everything, you know, or not everything. They know, like, they probably stay away from certain things that are, you know, probably tried everything, do everything. And I have friends have done nothing. I'm the only drug that I have ever done in my life was like after I had dental surgery and I was given Percocet and I took a couple pills of that, did not like the way it made me feel. And I said, I'm done. I don't need this anymore. You know, the last time I had a drink, you know, I didn't have my first drink until 5 years ago. I mean, I tasted beer when I was 15, didn't like the taste of it. And then 5 years ago I had, you know, a drink on my birthday and I probably could count the number of drinks I've had in the last 5 years, you know, wow. Probably 10.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
but that's my choice.
On the flip side, you know, one of the first pieces of advice, in the long correspondence that I had with Teller, he said, don't drink it, don't do drugs, you know? And he meant it as a very practical thing. Like you'll be more productive, you'll get more done. However, it's weird. I don't think I've ever talked about this publicly, but it was different when there was kind of a seminal moment when we did the pilot for Scam School, because Scam School takes place at a bar and because the MacGuffin is getting a free drink at the bar or whatever. I, for the first time ever, had a drink with cameras around me, and you can look, or I can look at, and I don't know how much of this is contrived, perception on my part, but I look at every television appearance, every time there's a camera around me before the age of 33, and I just see a dumb, terrified set of eyes and a big fat plastic grin on my face as I don't know what to do. And then I look at everything after shooting the pilots of Scam School, where I had a beer or two and I was loosened up and I found my tongue loosened and I found myself, as I thought about it, you know, if I'm a robot, it was like disabling filters, you know, accepting increased risk of saying the wrong thing in exchange for more authentic, soul revealing interactions. And I think artistically, I could point and say, no. I became factually more comfortable around cameras after that experience. There have been plenty of times that beer was not involved. But if anyone who listens to Night Attack will vouch for, there have been plenty of times that beer has been involved. And you can make different cases on which version of Brian is funnier or more engaged or more in the moment or whatever. But I don't think it's – I know this much. I know it's not as – black and white as I thought it was 20 years ago. And I can point to, just like playing the video game Fallout 3, Fallout 4, you know, you're picking up every drug that you can find because it has statistical benefits. It's like you have a, and this is in the game, you have some wine because it increases your strength and charisma, but reduces your endurance or whatever. I think there's a nugget of reality to that. And I don't have any answers as far as what the right amount is, but I know that where I'm at now is I'm not willing to dismiss out of hand that there might not be a net benefit to substance use for some people. I don't have any solution. I know that the perfect solution, which of course the perfect is, you know, often imaginary, is that all of us, you know, just are who we are and it comes from within, and that there are healthy ways to manifest it. But I personally have experienced some counterfactual examples of that.
I agree with everything you said, Brian. I also think that there's something to be concerned about or to keep an eye out for when you tie what you would consider creative success to drugs or alcohol use.
Right.
Right. If you say, well, I am better when I'm on, let's say I'm better when I drink, then you go down the road of, am I better when I drink more? Do I right. need to drink to be as good as this? What, like, how dependent do you become on this? And I think that's where, like, even moderation, you can still become hooked on a moderate amount where I need a little bit to get me through it. And I think that's,
well, and
whether or not it's healthy, it's not
a
great.
It's a very serious cliff. It's a very dangerous game to play, and there's a very good reason that the default answer should be what Teller told me: don't drink, don't do drugs, right? Well, because the odds of you dying trying to, you know, chase the dragon of that perfect set of that perfect art are very low if you're not drinking and not doing drugs, and they become very high if you're doing either or both.
Yeah, I'd like to spend that, because I'm very much like, I remember as a kid finding out, you know, Carl Sagan smoked pot, and that was the thing for me. You know, it's like, and that's, I make the joke, imagine what he could have done if he did.
Yeah,
you know, and it's like, it's silly. It's like he did. And you look at a lot of your favorite musicians and stuff do this, but never let that be a reason too, because there are so many great and talented people that don't do it, that are straight. Like Teller, in my opinion, is the greatest magician today and maybe one of the greatest magicians ever in history.
Agreed.
He is one of the most extremely productive, creative people you know and we know of. And I know a number of people that don't. And I know a number of people that did in the early days because they thought, I'm an artist, I need to do this. And then they got out of it because they realized they looked at how many people around them there was the price to pay, and they got off of it, and they were still extremely productive and creative. Maybe it helped unlock. I don't know. I think that's the dumbest reason in the world to do it, is if you think because somebody else does it, you want to try it for yourself to try to do it, if you haven't explored other ways to do that. I'm my own person. Nobody's like me. I don't try to be like anybody else. I have no problem writing tons of books and being extremely creative. You know, I have an output that I've heard people like, oh yeah, this writer, he's coked up and he writes this. I'm like, I write that much, you know, I write that many words a day and I don't use anything, you know? And I wrote, you know, 0 words a day 7 years ago. So I trained myself. I trained myself to do this. And I think that often the benefits, and I get the idea of relaxing and that, and particularly if you have, like, you have to perform, and I understand the attractiveness there.
By the way, they're different animals. You know, I think, especially in my 20s, you know, it was easy to never have a drink for anything because it was so important for the safety of, you know, doing a magic show is a different type of experience than speaking extemporaneously, telling stories, trying to be a raconteur and get everybody, you know, on the same wavelength as you. I was very much able to refine an act, do it over and over and over and over again with increasing precision every single time, to where finally I was worried about a single pause of a single breath in the third act, 43 minutes into a performance. And yet it was so different whenever there was an interview or I was dealing with so many vectors, or if I was trying to tell a story off the cuff or whatever. And I realized that I was deer in the headlights. I was flash frozen due to anxiety. And, you know, there's a million different ways to get through that. You know, whether it's meditation, whether it's exercise, whether it's probably the best one, which is just repeatedly putting yourself in a situation where you deal with that. But I'm not encouraging anybody to turn to any chemicals. I just don't think in good conscience I can say there's nothing good that comes from them artistically.
I don't think anybody's trying to make the point to say, oh, there's nothing to have it. But I would sort of add some caveats there. I'm in LA, and I know some very high functioning people that if you took that thing out of life, I don't know if they're going to enjoy life as much. It's a part of what they do, you know. It's funny though, because like I talked to, you know, I hung out with some people who are like, everybody there is like, oh, we do ayahuasca. I'm like, so let me see, you stay up late and you throw up in a bucket? That sounds fantastic. You know, hang on. This is like the worst. This is like a punishment. You know, I'd rather be waterboarded than do that. I live in LA where I'm surrounded, you know, by people who use all sorts of substances, stuff with varying degrees of success. But I will say there is a pattern, and it's an anecdotal observation, but my friends who are the least productive, the least successful, are the ones that use the most. Even just marijuana, they're the ones, because the problem happens is they get a deadline, they get stressed out, they get high, right? They have an audition in the morning, they get stressed out, they get high. And then they get after the audition, they're still stressed out about how the audition turned out. They get high, not to relax, but to deal with their anxieties, and they keep self-medicating themselves. And I know a number of people that I think are complete F-ups, are complete screw-ups, because it's hard. And when you use, it's hard to know where the limit is and where your strain is. And we have different biochemistries and biologies and stuff. I know some successful people that lost 3 or 4 years out of their lives because they're like, oh, this is cool. I can do this, helps me relax, do this. Well, I'll do this other thing and I'll do this. The next thing you know, they've got to go to rehab because it's become, even though they're performing a lot and they're working a lot, they've gotten into the spiral sort of thing. So my advice is like, is don't, just don't. And find ways to do it, because not to say that it can't work or whatever, but I think that the trade-off, I think, is just not, I know why a lot of creative personalities do this, because when you haven't, when you don't fit into the world and you want to change the world, there's an appeal there. But if you're not doing it now and it's not, you don't even bother. Why? You know, because there's so many people who don't need it, you know, but I get the relaxation. I get that sort of thing. But it's such a dangerous sort of slope that I think most people don't need to. It becomes a crutch.
Yeah. I would agree. I think we would all three agree that the null hypothesis should be that, find out what you're capable of without any kind of intervention of any kind of chemical nature whatsoever.
Yeah.
And see how far that goes. I think that universally should be, because it might be that what is in you is so beautiful and white hot and liquid fire that to corrupt it with anything chemical would be a tragedy to the art you're trying to put out.
But I'll say the other part of it, though, if you're in an industry or something like that where it is the norm and the only, if you say, you know what, I want to be a competitive bodybuilder and you need to use steroids, you need to use these things to train. If you like know what you're doing, and like, I'm not going to say, oh, you shouldn't do that. That's your choice. It's your choice. But I think in a lot of creative endeavors, I think that, you know, if you're getting by without it, then you don't need it. If you think that's the thing that's blocking you, I don't think that's often what's blocking a lot of people. I mean, there's a difference. Sometimes you notice a difference. Like, yeah, somebody on Adderall, play a game for 36 hours straight. I can't do that. If I was on Adderall, I could probably write for 36 hours straight. Not going to really help me in the end of it because, if you know, that time. There are cases where you go, yeah, like fighter pilots. Fighter pilots without go pills aren't going to be as effective, but you know, unless it's a really particular edge case scenario where you're like, really, I need it, you know.
Man, this letter does such a good job of framing it. Like, I don't know what... I don't know. It sounds like none of us know the answer, but all of us know that being safe and alive is better than being irresponsible and dead.
And there's a difference between tying it to your creative process and your creative drive and to whether you're exploring it or experimenting. But it can't be core. It really shouldn't be core to whatever it is you're doing. That's incredibly dangerous.
Agreed. Absolutely.
An anecdote. Like, one of the reasons I did not drink until I didn't have my first drink till a couple of years ago was first 15 tasted beer, said this sucked, said I don't want to, why develop a taste for this now? If I don't like it, I'll probably be more productive. When I was 18 years old and I was working on my first cruise ship, I could drink because I'm on a cruise ship, and 18 and up was the drinking age there, right? And I had passenger status, so I could do that. And I'm thinking, I'm 18 years old, I'm on a ship, which is a floating bar. I looked at every entertainer I knew, by the time they were 30, they had a drinking problem. Not necessarily a huge one, but they had ones where some of them every day they would get a buzz or get buzzed to a point. Everybody I knew, and some of them were much worse that I saw, you know, one of the people I looked up to, you know, who developed a heroin addiction. You know, this guy had a heroin addiction. He kept trying to do these Asian, you know, kept doing these Asian tours and stuff, and I didn't quite understand. And then I realized, oh, and then someone told me, like, yeah, that's because he does this. And then I watched him, a guy with a lot of amazing talent, very, very charismatic person. And I watched his career just flat out hit because he was a guy that he could handle it. Heroin's another issue too, because, like, you know, it's like stories we could tell about people whose names you recognize, you know, and how that's become problematic. So for me, I was 18 years old. I said, you know what? I'm not going to drink because everybody I know, because you're stuck on a cruise ship, you're on a floating bar, all you can do is drink. You know, you go to the crew bar, it's a bar. You go to an island, where do you go? You go hang out at a bar. I said, I'm going to be the weirdo, and I know people are going to think I'm a weirdo, but if I don't drink, I won't have that problem. I won't be a 29-year-old person with this, you know, the big monkey I'm trying to get off my back is an addiction that I could have avoided entirely. This is my choice. So, but not everybody, you know, obviously not everybody drinks is going to have an addiction, but that was my choice, was looking around me because every entertainer I knew had a problem.
Well, and I think it's a good point that you bring up where it's like there's different paths to success. And the more conventional one does involve, you know, socializing and networking. And oftentimes it's at a bar in that kind of situation. And for you to take the more challenging path obviously seems to have paid off pretty well for you. So for anybody who's questioning, like, do I have to take the common path and do this thing that a lot of other people do to socialize, to connect, to build bonding moments? The answer is no, you do not. There are plenty of different other paths.
Now, if I were to go back in time and talk to young Brian Brushwood, and let's say he wasn't doing a show about trying to get a bar bet, but get a drink in a bar.
Right.
And he's like, nah, I'm doing a street magic show, whatever. I feel anxiety, whatever. What would you suggest I do? I'm like, Brian, I have the perfect plan for you. I'm going to put you through what I went through. Was I'm going to have you take 4 different improv courses at once.
Oh my God. You know,
and I'm going to have you go on stage and do every stupid thing you can in front of an audience. I'm going to have you go through every single thing, break down that barrier kind of thing. And now when you go in front of there, you're going to be like, whatever, you know,
What you're getting at is, once you remove the fear of failure, once you've experienced every variety, every flavor of failure that you're going to interact with, it loses its sting. It becomes familiar territory. You're like, oh, yeah, this is that kind of failure where they're all booing me. This is that other kind of failure where I seize up and didn't respond or whatever. And you know, I think that there are different ways to conquer all those fears.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I would say that sometimes you look at like, okay, I have an anxiety. I know that, you know, getting a little bit buzzed or a little high may help that. Like, it's fine. But are there other ways to solve this sort of thing? And it might end up being the most expedient way is to have a drink before you go do it. But like, man, I just out here with entertainers and in a culture that doesn't really tell people pull back, dial back, dude.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, you're surrounded. You're in the belly of the beast right there.
It's amazing what people consider normal here.
Wow.
Yeah. So there you go. That's our answer. We don't have an answer, but yeah, look,
the answer
examples.
Is good question.
And we're also addiction
experts. Examples of, yeah, of where, you know, performance enhancing, mind altering, whatever things have, you know, certainly been a part of somebody's success, you know, and that can be a reality, but also look for examples of where it wasn't part of it. And I think that you may not get in the same place, but a different place, it could be just as good and ultimately may be, you know, more sustainable.
So, yeah.
So like I was so influenced because Penn and Teller didn't drink or do drugs, you know, and as a teenager, I heard that. My friends and I said, this is cool. And I was the one that stuck with that the longest of not doing it. And finally, I was like, all right, I'm going to taste beer. I'm going to try a drink because I don't want to act like a vampire. Like it's going to, like, I didn't want to be that my obsession being, and I've never done this thing, but you drink caffeine. Yeah, but that's totally different ish, you know,
sure.
To, you know, I'll alter myself with this substance, but not this one. I didn't want to be, you know, a cartoon character. My thing I want to bring up again is, man, I've been having a great time studying, learning. I learned my goal for my birthday was I wanted to learn Python, right? Because Python's used in all these cool things, core, you know, a lot of core, cool programming, artificial intelligence, machine learning, all this sort of stuff. So I went to Udemy, and I found a course. It was like a $10 course on, you know, it was of Python, and it was like 30 hours of instruction, right? Or 20 hours, 30 hours of instruction for $10. Quizzes, code-alongs, all this sort of stuff. I was talking to a friend who's in college about what that stuff I'm doing. I'm like, yeah, that's like the college course I'm doing. I'm like, oh, it was $10 for me, you know, my own time, you know? Mm-hmm. And then I did a machine learning course, and I found out that was the same one as a very similar to a college program that's using the same tool sets and stuff. And there's a lot of stuff, and you're on your own to sort of do this. We are in an amazing time. And I'm like, I'm surprised, but not surprised, but sort of surprised that more people aren't gobbling up these skills.
Well, it's almost as though the limitation is not the expense of college. It's the limitation is there are people who want the comfort of being surrounded by paternalistic teachers and tutors who will make sure that you stay on task.
Oh, and I'm not even talking about as a substitute for college, like post college, like just picking up, like, I have it being among creatives. I talk to people who are creatives and not having traction and out of work or financially difficult situations and stuff. And it's like, how has your resume changed in the last 5 years? How is that the part that says skills? Have those skills declined in value? Have they increased in value? You know, I think that's the thing I say. Look at that factor in your resume. It says skills should be growing, and it also should be more relevant, not less relevant. There's no excuse. And people can say time. I'm like, yes, we go through periods of time where it's hard to find it. But if you've got a Netflix subscription, or if you have a video game system of some kind, spend half the time on there and half the time in learning these skills. It's an amazing time. And I've said this story before, but like, you know, 6 months after I started doing, you know, one of these programs and just started making my own projects just to see what happened, I would be at parties and getting job offers, you know, and I have to qualify like, no, I'm a writer. I'm not looking for a job, whatever. But it was because once you have a proficiency or at least know how to be proficient at something, there's an interest there. So,
I would say even step it a little bit back, because personally, I would feel the anxiety of like, oh, golly, I don't know. Do I identify as a programmer? Am I really the type of person to try this language or that language? And the answer is, you don't have to know if you're that kind of person or not, but you do have to, you are obligated to open the door to the possibility that you are. And you could do that and just say, you know what, for 1 week, I'm going to spend 20 minutes a day trying to learn Python. And 1 week from now, I'll know if I hate it or not.
I'm not even talking about programming. I'm talking about, like, there's tons of great stuff on Photoshop and other things and design and their courses. There's, you know, there's a lot of different systems out there, Udemy, Skillshare, things like this, that will give you a really good deep understanding about anything you podcasting, whatever. Like, and people like, I know how to podcast. Like, well, there's a lot more to know about, you know, what Bryce knows versus somebody who wants to start doing it. There's a world of difference. Audio production. There is databases. There's so much stuff out there between Lynda. Like, if you have a library card, most library systems in the United States, Lynda, L-Y-N-D-A, you take a look at the courses on Lynda, and there's an amazing number of things there. And people get so focused in, like, well, I get a certificate that's useful somewhere else. And it's like, maybe not. But, like, if you take a look at, like, I'm going to look, like, lynda.com, which is free for most people, like, you know, they have simple stuff on finance and tips and PowerPoint and then, you know, personal effectiveness, economic success habits, you know, resume designing, you know, PowerPoint. I mean, you just get into, like, the, you know, supply chains, things like this. You know, if I wanted to go work for a medium-sized company and accounting or some other, you know, warehouse management, if I said, yeah, well, I know this thing about logistics, or I know this or whatever. It's amazing. I'm saying there's so much stuff out there.
Have you, I don't know if this is more of a programmer thing, but have you messed around with the Swift Playgrounds thing from Apple?
Yeah. So Swift Playgrounds, what that does is it's, basically, like, sometimes when you work with a program system, what you want to do is basically run things as you do it. So it makes it, it's instead of having to do anything from the command line. And so Swift Playgrounds is a really great way to learn the Swift programming language. Mm-hmm. It teaches you basics. And the thing that I found out is that from learning different languages is that once you learn the basics of one language, learning another one, it's not like foreign languages, the rules all change. In computers, it's and or operators and stuff like this. It's syntax, but you can have a glossary in front of you to go, like, oh, if I'm writing a function here, you know, I've got to use semicolons after the end of a line. This one doesn't care. Was very easy for me to go from Ruby to Swift to Python. And I'm not a master at any of these at all, but I can find the answers to what I'm trying to do. But yeah, Swift Playgrounds is good. There's a lot of really cool stuff online, you know, for other stuff. But I think Swift Playgrounds is a great way to understand the basics in Swift. We hopefully will see it in other places. Swift is challenging, though, because it's what's like, it's a code safe language, which means you have to, it doesn't like you to, if a function's not going to work and fail, you have to explicitly say this is how you're going to handle error handling and stuff, which is it's a technical way of saying that if you want to just start something that's a little more easier, you know, I used to tell people Ruby and now I just say do Python.
Wow. So, that was fast. Yeah.
Ruby's great if you want to do web development, because Ruby and Rails, it's super fast. You can put together a website that interacts with databases and stuff the fastest on Ruby on Rails. But when you're getting into building other stuff, like, you can build, you know, Python programs, you can get it to run on a Raspberry Pi, it'll run on a Mac, or run on a Windows, you know.
Did you, the lessons that you took, are they video lessons? Are they printed? Or
I think they're usually video, right?
So, yeah, the courses, what they do, like the Udemy course I did, I think that the thing I did, this guy named Colt Steele has a course on Udemy, which
let's take a look.
Yeah, it is awesome. And he's a great instructor, because, you know, it's funny, though. It's like he's got cats in there. In the middle of it, you'll hear him, you know, yelling at one of his cats. So Modern Python 3 Bootcamp. Yeah. So this is a great, you know, introduction to it. This is 30 hours of content.
Holy cow.
And what you'll do is you go through, and he is a great instructor because he does the videos, and then you have these coding exercises which are built into the system. So, hey, try to make this function work here. And then you go in there and you try to code this function and make it work. And then if you don't work it says, no, try again. So there's an interactive part. There's quizzes. There's all this. And I would argue that the level of the material, I think that some of these courses are better than what you take in a college course. Because often a college course is an instructor in front of a blackboard, and they haven't gone through the efforts of actually trying to make their materials really work there.
As approachable as possible.
Yeah. So $12, it's a 30-hour course. You know, I mean, it's. But then there's so many other things in there, too, that I recommend everybody get some understanding of what programming is, because it affects every part of your life now?
I'll tell you what, like in our lifetime, we've seen the emergence of a nationwide effort to get people up off the couch, get them athletic. You know, we see the Presidential Council on physical fitness and all that stuff. I wouldn't be surprised if over the next 30 years, we saw a similar universal level effort to get people into the habit of not exercising their body, but instead, you know, growing. And it's like, you know, just like you might casually say, hey, what do you do for working out? As if, like, of course you do something for working out. You would be an unhealthy person if you didn't. It'd be interesting to say, like, oh, what are you learning these days? What courses are you taking? And make it one of those universally appreciated and approached things.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's Hour of Code and there's Code Day, which is one. And you know, it's I don't think it's most people's ambition of life is not to be a computer programmer, you know, and understood. But understanding a little bit of how these things work helps you, because all of the tools we use for the most part are that, or it's affecting us. And you hear these terms thrown about. And now when you read things about, you know, when you're a tech journalist is covering artificial intelligence, they don't know what they're covering. They don't. You know, have the time, you know, I think people have time to learn a little bit more, but anyhow, point is, yeah, learn it like this, learn some stuff, get in there, but look at these Lynda, Udemy, go through these courses. Just, you know, the cost is no longer a reason. Access to information. It used to be several hundred years ago, if you wanted to learn a thing, you had to go to somebody who knew this thing and beg them to teach you and you become an apprentice. And then finally, maybe they would teach you something. Okay. Then we had the idea of public schools, which is the idea of let's not make, you know, certain knowledge just restricted to the rich. Let's let other people have access to it. And I would say by and large, the idea of public education has been a wonderful impact on humanity. And we can have arguments on how it should function, how it should be structured, whatever. But the idea that everybody should be able to have access to learning the fundamentals is great. There was arguments in magic, though, about like, you know, that, you know, Brian's the devil because Brian's teaching everybody who wants to learn magic.
Yeah. Well, and as we know, there are only 75 units of magic in the world. And the more people have them, the less you have.
Or even the argument would be the like, you know, like, oh, well, you need to prove that you're like, I got to let some creepy guy in the van decide if I get to learn how to, you know, do a second deal. That doesn't sound safe.
Yeah.
So. We've had this amazing revolution in the last 30 years, primarily because of computers, where it's cheap. It's effectively cost nothing through YouTube. You can learn just about anything you want. It doesn't mean that I can watch a video and become an airplane mechanic, but I can watch a video about engines and building things and stuff and then say I've got a knowledge, then go to community college course, then find my way through there. But it's a heck of a lot easier to get that base knowledge.
Man, I know factual accounts of people who figured out that now that information was free, they could spend 2 or 3 weeks reading all the tutorials, watching all the videos, and I don't know, get a pilot's license. And I know people who, after having done that, they flew the exact minimum number of hours behind and got their license, and then immediately, you know, they ran up the hours and they flew commercial airliners because they studied exactly that which they absolutely needed to learn.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing. Don't be afraid to learn. You should have, I think everybody should have part of their week is Brian Pillar's exercise. There's like, I'm going to spend a couple hours a week learning something new, learning a skill. So,
So is Udemy and Lynda, are they you pay the cover charge and it's all you can eat on the inside?
No.
So
Lynda per course. Lynda is subscription where you get access to their thing. Udemy is a marketplace, so people will sell their own courses. So like this Modern Python one is like $11 on sale right now.
Yeah, they do sales all. Yeah, Udemy, you pay once, you have that course for a lifetime. Lynda subscription, but Lynda is often free. Most libraries have an agreement where you can use Lynda. I use several different ones, and one of the ways that I'll learn something is I did 3 different Python tutorials, and then I did 2 machine learning, and now I've started on my 3rd one as I start doing stuff. The goal is not to be like, I finished it, everybody, look, I got the certificate. Your goal is to learn this stuff.
Yep.
So I repeat stuff. I go take other courses to sort of even the same material because my brain hurts when I'm trying to learn things.
Yeah. Speaking of which, you got any other picks for after things?
I'm going to say, hey, my pick is you go to Udemy right now. They're doing their $11 grad sale. They're doing courses on there. And I think that my pick is if you want to learn a programming language, I think Python's great or Ruby's great. Ruby's great because you can be building like a good Ruby on Rails course. You're up and running in like 3 minutes creating a website, which is kind of awesome. And then you learn about things like, the development environments, how you code in there using online ones, which are really cool. The idea of an online one, it's a browser that lets you do your code and it runs it on a remote server. So you don't have to install anything on your home desktop, and you can have that server have access and create websites and stuff. It's how I build author page. I'm just pick one. Go take a look at it. My pick.
You know what? Following your example, I'm going to give my pick is one of the things that we're doing is, we got this drone. But of course, you want to get FAA certified if you're going to do it for any kind of commercial whatevers. And they have courses that are $200 that promise to teach you all the things that you need to know. There's a fantastic 2-hour video, and it's titled Free Drone Certification Study Guide from Tony and Chelsea Northrup. And I've just been leaving it playing in the background, and it's amazing how much you pick up, even while I'm goofing around playing Hearthstone or whatever. Like, you can't not... It's more challenging than you would expect to unknow the stuff that you pick up. You know, when you learn, this means this, megahertz frequency is, for parking information and not for significant, flight information. This other section here, it's like, here's how you read an FAA chart. And these are, this 400 feet means this for this reason and that reason. It's great. You pick up that information, and I think we're going to try to get everybody on the team drone certified so that we can all use the drone for commercial purposes, which we definitely haven't done until now.
So two things. One, by the way, Udemy has several courses too available, and I'm looking one here. They have one, Build Your Own Open Source Drone, which I have a project with a friend where we're building one for
reasons.
Questionable purposes. And if I had watched this damn course with him, we probably would have saved ourselves a couple months of work just because of what we were trying to. And I don't know if this course is available then. And that's the other thing is you're like, I don't want to spend 12 hours, but you find out, oh my gosh, they actually have a course here for $11 on getting your certification. Read the reviews. Sometimes people, they're not as highly rated, and you read the reviews, it's because somebody wants it to be easy. Sometimes it's real valid concerns.
Sure.
But yeah, there's like, they have stunning aerial videography and photography using drones, $11, how to become a drone pilot and start a business.
I will go ahead and qualify my recommendation on this. This 2-hour course is definitely targeted on passing the certification. It's basically like a lot. And he says, look, there's three questions. One is always going to be basically a joke. And then there's going to be two that seem legit. And he said that, a lot of this is common sense stuff if you understand how to read a map or whatever. But, for the parts that aren't, here's some weird stuff that only applies to airline pilots. But I'm going to tell it to you because you need to know it for this drone course. Don't ask me why it's on the test. I'm just here to tell you how to pass the test.
That's helpful. That's helpful. So, man, there's so much stuff out there. Bryce?
I don't have a learning pick, but I've been watching Arrested Development. And
oh, is the new season out, or you're watching the previous one?
Yeah, so the new, the first half of the fifth season is out, and it's okay.
Is it?
But it made me go back and rewatch the first three seasons, and those still really hold up.
How is it watching this beloved property in the context of that weird interview where everybody was sort of talking about Jeffrey Tambor in front of him Jessica Walters broke down crying and stuff. It's like,
it's not zero. It's not a zero effect. There are some weird things about it. And I don't know. I like season five, at least what is out now of season five, 'cause they split it in half. I really liked season four, where they changed everything up and they had this funky, timeline.
iTunes interface.
Yeah. And season five is kind of like a half step back from that. And I think it's worse because it's still trying to tell these really long character stories, but in these really short formats, and there's a lot of narration, and it's kind of weird. But the first three seasons still really hold up. I am almost done rewatching those, and that's just an all time great comedy. So, Arrested Development.
I've been meaning to start watching it.
You're gonna give it a try one of these days.
I'm like, that's the you know, it's a funny thing. It's like I have a myriad number of weird hobbies and things like this, and then people go, how do you find the time? And they ask me a basic question about something in culture or society. I'm like, I have no idea what that is.
That's your default answer now. It's like, how do you have time for it? You're like, I never watched Arrested Development, and then everybody will understand. They're all like, oh geez, God. Well,
you know, but it's sort of an interesting thing, because it's like, if you watched one less season a year of a show and you spent that 20 hours, like I just looked at like Colt Steele, who did the really great Python course. He has a new course out, which is on cryptocurrencies and stuff, which, you know, like how to build environmentally unfriendly technologies that pirate from the electrical grid and perhaps put a lot of our currencies into inefficient systems.
The counterfactual being, get paid a modest token amount for keeping alive the infrastructure for a 21st century decentralized currency.
I think there are better ways to do it than I think. I'm all into cryptocurrency. Let me be very, very clear. I'm all into blockchain. I love that. And I stand by what I said about 5 years ago in a white paper. Like, the problem is that this is the system as it is increases inefficiencies. When we start using things like, hey, selling computational cycles and creating value from it, that's when it gets exciting for me. But it's a thing that people should, I think, and I think he's got a course out about it, you know, for it's like $11. It's a 10-hour course. And I think at the end of that 10-hour course, somebody who has an interest in this area will probably have a very, very intelligent discussion, more so than me, about this. And that's what I love about this, is it's like, hey, for $11, 10 hours of your time, you know, a couple hours a day in a week, you will, we've talked about this before, like to get to the top 99% is effing hard, and you got to have a lot of things in there. But to get to the smart top 80% level,
yeah,
probably a couple weekends.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, B+ lifestyle, live it.
Yeah, B+ students. Summer school's better than you think. So, all right, guys, thank you very much. This has been fun. It's been After.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.